KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Akutan, Alaska.
It's time now for your community window here on KSDP. Starting with job openings, the QT Tribe of Sandpoint is looking for a grant writer, an executive director, and an environmental assistant. The Shimigan Corporation of Sandpoint is hiring a housekeeper and a bartender. The Belkoski Tribe of King Cove is looking for a part-time IGAP assistant and a full-time Belkoski Environmental Program assistant. EATS is hiring a behavior health trainee and a community health representative. Both of those positions can be in Sandpoint or King Cove. They're also hiring a community health aide for Falls Pass and Nelson Lagoon, a clinical information clerk for King Cove, and a clinical information clerk slash janitor for Cold Bay. Community announcements. Once again, congratulations on wrapping up your basketball season to the Rookies, Eagles, and Lady Eagles, and best of luck representing the Aleutian Chain Conference to the King Cove T-Jacks, who are advancing to state. And today is March 4th, 2025. Happy birthday to Shirley Smith. And that's all for the community window. If you have anything you'd like for us to put on the air or web, you can contact us through email at cw@apradio.org. You can call us at 907-383-5737, or you can still fax us at 907-383-5271. Also, look for updates, meeting archives, and more at apradio.org. I'm Amy Mack. Thanks for listening and have a great day. It's time now for your weather, tide predictions, and sunrise and sunset, starting with your coastal water forecast, courtesy of the National Weather Service of Anchorage, Alaska. From Sitkanap to Castle Cape, small craft advisory Friday. Today, south winds 15 knots, seas 7 feet. Tonight, north winds 20 knots, seas 5 feet. And Friday, northwest winds 20 knots, increasing to 30 in the afternoon, seas 6 feet. Castle Cape to Cape Tolstoy. Today, south winds 15 knots, seas 6 feet. Tonight, variable winds 10 knots, seas 5 feet. And Friday, northwest winds 20 knots, seas 4 feet. Cape Tolstoy to Cape Sarashef, small craft advisory today and Friday. Today, southwest winds 15 knots, seas 9 feet. Tonight, northwest winds 20 knots, seas 7 feet. And Friday, northwest winds 25 knots, seas 6 feet. Port Hyde and Nelson Lagoon, today, south winds 20 knots, seas 5 feet. Tonight, south winds 15 knots, seas 4 feet. And Friday, west winds 15 knots, seas 6 feet. Nelson Lagoon to Cape Sarashef, small craft advisory today and Friday. Today, west winds 20 knots, seas 5 feet. Tonight, west winds 20 knots, seas 9 feet with snow. And Friday, northwest winds 25 knots, seas 12 feet with snow. Your detailed forecast for the Alaska Peninsula. Today, mostly cloudy. Isolated snow showers in the morning, then scattered snow and rain showers in the afternoon. Highs in the lower 30s to lower 40s, south winds 10 to 15 miles an hour. Tonight, scattered snow showers in the evening, then numerous snow showers after midnight. Snow accumulation can be up to 2 inches, lows in the lower 20s to lower 30s, west winds 15 miles an hour. And Friday, numerous snow showers in the morning, then scattered snow showers in the afternoon. Snow accumulation can be up to 2 inches, highs in the mid-20s to mid-30s, northwest winds 10 to 20 miles per hour. Your tide predictions for the Pop-Off Island. There's a high tide at 6:18 a.m. at 7 feet, 7 inches, a low at 2:07 p.m. at 3 inches, and a high at 9:11 p.m. at 4 feet, 7 inches. Your sun rose at 8:18 this morning, and your sun will set at 7:28, giving us 11 hours and 10 minutes of daylight hours. And that was your weather, tide predictions, and sunrise and sunset here on KSDP and KAEB. I'm Amy Mack. Thanks for listening and have a great day.
Today on KUCB News, Unalaska officials were in Juneau this week advocating for state funds on various local projects. And President Donald Trump supports road construction from King Cove to Cold Bay's airport. All of that and more coming up.
Programming on KUCB is made possible by GCI. Fiber Plus Internet is now available in Unalaska. GCI now offers high-speed internet in your community at the same plans and same pricing as Anchorage. More information at gci.com/internet.
You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. It's Thursday, March 6th, 2025. I'm Sophia Stewart-Rossi with some local news. Unalaska's city manager and the leader of a regional Alaska Native corporation went to Juneau this week to advocate for state funds that could push various local projects over the finish line. But they know the budget is tight. City manager Bill Homke and Unalaska Corporation CEO Natalie Kale told lawmakers about Unalaska's unique priorities as part of the city's annual lobbying trip. At the top of their list is improving the Robert Storrs Small Boat Harbor and paving Captain's Bay Road. Homke says even with a strained capital budget across Alaska, there's a reason he and Kale were there.
We're laying the groundwork this year, if there's no funding to be had, then to be at their doorsteps next year for the same projects.
The city wants $5 million to replace aging infrastructure and expand capacity at the Small Boat Harbor, and another $5 million to pave Captain's Bay Road, which leads to multiple seafood processing facilities, including a major Trident facility slated to open by 2029. Officials also want to fund an investigation into Unalaska's geothermal energy potential, reinforce shorelines against erosion, combine a pair of dredging projects, and upgrade the airport. It's a lot to take on, and the total price tag is over $14 million. But Homke remains optimistic.
These legislators, they pay attention. It's a much smaller state than others, so our state government is much closer to those that they represent.
Homke and Kale were in town Monday and Thursday to meet with representatives. Unalaska Mayor Vince Tudyakov Sr. and Councilmember Anthony Longo planned to join them on the trip, but were unable to leave the island. Instead, they'll attend the annual Southwest Alaska Municipal Conference in Anchorage this week. Some Unalaska officials will be in Washington, D.C. later this month to make their case to the federal government. Homke expects to meet with newly appointed department heads in President Donald Trump's administration and with military representatives. When it comes to making connections, he says he wants to be, quote, first in instead of last in.
Of course, as you know, Unalaska has a lot of issues that are very unique. And unless you really meet them and talk to them, some of the newer folk that may be coming in with appointments wouldn't really understand how we do business out here.
Kale says she plans to tell federal officials in D.C. about long-standing military contamination and ongoing cleanup efforts in the Aleutians, which could take decades to complete and would require a significant amount of funding. Boosting Alaska's energy sector was a priority among President Donald Trump's executive orders on his first day back in office. The list of projects he supported, including opening drilling in the Arctic National Wild Refuge and reinstating support for the Ambler Road. But one item seemed out of place, a road from King Cove to Cold Bay's all-weather airport. Alaska Desk's Theo Greenlee reports.
The gravel road out of King Cove hugs a narrow strip of land between the tundra and the shore. Across the water, you can make out the buildings of the city of Cold Bay. The road dead-ends about a dozen miles away, but Trump's executive order means that it eventually could continue on to those buildings. King Cove City Administrator Gary Hennig says he was caught off guard when he read the order.
It was a little bit of a surprise, but a pleasant surprise.
Air travel in and out of King Cove is notoriously difficult. Harsh weather and a short gravel airstrip combine to make medical evacuations a big problem. Residents argue that an 11-mile road to Cold Bay and its much longer all-weather runway would save lives by providing reliable access to Anchorage's medical services. But conservationists have opposed it for decades. The road would cut through the Eisenbeck National Wildlife Refuge, which dozens of conservation groups and Alaska tribes say would upend decades of conservation law in Alaska. Rob Rosenfeld is a consultant for many of those tribes fighting the project, and he says the road has to be stopped.
Compromise is not an option in the case of one of the most fragile ecosystems in the world. The habitat revolving around the eelgrass is incredibly fragile.
Eisenbeck supports one of the largest eelgrass beds in the world, critical for geese populations that migrate through the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. And the Federal Interior Department would have to swap a section of the refuge land with King Cove to make the road possible. Critics like Rosenfeld warn that the land swap could weaken the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act, more commonly referred to as ANILCA. They say that would set a dangerous precedent.
This means that all refuge lands, all ANILCA lands, all designated wilderness, and even national park lands are vulnerable to the whims of changing administrations.
A road has never been built through conservation lands under ANILCA, and land exchanges under the Act typically require congressional approval. Ian Dooley is an attorney with Earth Justice, one of the organizations opposing the land swap.
This would be the first land exchange under ANILCA that would allow for giving away, divesting protected lands out of a conservation system unit for the purposes of putting a road through that conservation system unit.
Dooley represents the native village of Hooper Bay, located hundreds of miles from Eisenbeck in the Yukon-Kuskokwim River Delta. Now, they've taken a central role in the fight against the road because those eelgrass beds are critical habitat for several species of geese, which Hooper Bay residents rely on for subsistence.
Nearly the entire globe's population of these two populations of birds rely on both Eisenbeck and the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta for different parts of their life cycles.
Edgar Tall Sr., the tribal chief of the native village of Hooper Bay, says threatening those geese would impact his community's way of life.
We only rely on seasonal subsistence because 80 to 90% of my community do not work. So they only rely on subsistence to survive.
But Dean Gould, the president of King Cove's Native Corporation, says the road is also crucial to their ability to access their subsistence lands.
If the road to Cove Bay was there, we'd be able to use them a lot more often because right now you have to, if it's nice, you take a boat, or then you got to get in the skiff and all that. And not too many people have that capability.
Gould is hopeful the project will go through this time, especially since former President Joe Biden's administration also endorsed the project near the end of his term. But Gould is wary, given past federal flip-flops.
Seemed like we're more on of a positive note, but but we've been there before, too, also. So one second you're smiling, and next one you're holding your breath.
The decision now rests with the Department of the Interior. King Cove officials are waiting to hear from the secretary or deputy secretary on next steps. In Unalaska, I'm Theo Greenlee.
Earlier this year, Governor Mike Dunleavy submitted 5 new requests for federal fisheries disaster assistance for last summer's salmon season. That includes commercial salmon fisheries on the Alaska Peninsula, Kodiak, Chignik, Lower Cook Inlet, and Prince William Sound. The state accounts for roughly half of the fishery disasters around the country over the last several years, which includes a variety of species like salmon, crab, and Pacific cod. And Kodiak fishermen harvested just over 7.5 million pinks last summer, which was less than 40% of the 10-year average. That meant last summer was one of the lowest valued commercial pink salmon seasons on record for Kodiak Island. Although the exact cause for the decline is unknown, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game cited changes in ocean temperatures and other environmental factors in the Gulf of Alaska in a report the department released in November. If the latest fishery disaster requests are approved, it's unclear right now how much money would go to the affected fishermen and communities. Dunleavy's latest disaster requests are currently listed as pending. According to NOAA Fisheries website, along with the 2023 North Alaska Peninsula Drift Gillnet Salmon Fishery and the 2024 Kotzebue District Salmon Fishery. The U.S. Secretary of Commerce has 120 days to acknowledge they've received them and then make a determination on each disaster request. A recently passed federal law called the Fishes Act requires that after a disaster is approved and a spend plan from the state is received, then the secretary must disperse the funds within 90 days. The Unalaska Raiders won their first regional basketball games last night. The girls played first, blowing Nanilchik out of the water by about 40 points. The boys played second against Lumen Christi in an intense battle, winning by just 4 points. The teams left the island Tuesday after taking on the Soldotna JV team for a series of senior night games. They'll both play again tonight. Girls starting the evening at 6 o'clock against Seward. The boys will take on Sioux Valley at 7:30. Both games will be streamed right here on KUCB 89.7 FM and on KUCB.org. Let's take a look at KUCB's community calendar for other events happening this week. The Unalaska City School District is hosting a town hall format meeting this evening to discuss budget challenges and solutions. The meeting will take place at the Unalaska Public Library starting at 5 o'clock. Again, the meeting will take place at the Unalaska Public Library. Museum of the Aleutians and KUCB are partnering up with the community to learn more about our video collections. Community members are invited to help us document names, places, and other details from our archival footage. We will be playing clips and hosting a discussion this evening from 6 to 8 o'clock at the Museum of the Aleutians. Also happening tonight, the Fireside Writing Club meets in the Unalaska Public Library this evening starting at 7 o'clock till 8:30. Share your poetry, spoken word, song lyrics, short fiction, or any creative work with the group. The club is open to all levels of writers. Tomorrow, dive-in movie night is happening at the Unalaska Aquatic Center Friday evening from 6:30 to 8:30. Friends and family can float around and relax while watching a movie on the big screen. Children who have not passed their swim test must be accompanied by an adult. This weekend, the Aleutian Pribilof Islands Association is hosting a run walk this Saturday. The event will start at 11 o'clock in the morning at Kelty Field. They will have shirts for participants, snacks, and an inflatable colon. Also happening Saturday, the Polar Bear Run. Join the PCR as they kick off the racing season and test your physical limitations against the elements in the annual Polar Bear 5K Run. The course is from the community center towards Summer Bay and back. Check-in is at 1 in the afternoon, and the race starts at 1:30. For more information on all these community events or for more later this week, head to our community calendar at KUCB.org. That's the news from Unalaska. I'm Sophia Stewart-Rossi, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at KUCB.org, and please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.
From KMXT in Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
Governor Mike Dunleavy introduced a bill on February 21st that aims to reverse Alaska's ban on finfish farming. As reported by KUCB's Theo Greenlee, Alaska currently only allows aquaculture for shellfish and kelp. Dunleavy says the bill would allow farmers to breed and develop finfish stocks, although salmon farming would remain prohibited. But some lawmakers are pushing back. State Representative Louise Stutes, a Kodiak Republican and chair of the House Fisheries Committee, told legislators during a House floor session that the bill could put Alaska's wild fisheries at risk while the industry is still struggling.
Lifting a ban on fin fish farming, regardless of which species, regardless of saltwater or freshwater, would be sending the wrong signal to the industry, fishing communities, and fishing families across the state that are struggling currently to recover.
The bill faces significant hurdles in the state legislature. Stutes, along with House Fisheries Committee Vice Chair Bryce Edgman, released a statement opposing the bill. Fish farming was outlawed in Alaska in 1990 following widespread opposition from lawmakers and the public. Although the bill excludes salmon farming, Stutes warned it could set the stage.
Pursuing freshwater finfish farming of any kind is a foot in the door for salmon farming in Alaska.
The global aquaculture industry is worth more than $6 billion. China leads the sector, producing about one-third of the global output, according to a 2024 study from the United Nations. The United States produces about 2%. Dunleavy's proposed bill would limit fish farming methods to, quote, inland closed system bodies of water, close quote. Alicia Bishop is the regional aquaculture coordinator for NOAA. She says that means stocked ponds and fish tanks.
We're not talking about open water cages or any other cultivation method like that. So this would be, you know, on land, closed ponds, or recirculating aquaculture systems.
The bill also requires any farmed fish be sterilized so they couldn't reproduce if they did escape the tanks. Still, its path and any current support in the legislature remains unclear.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Madsen, delivering the essentials for everyday life in the last frontier. Learn more at madsen.com/Alaska.
Red king crab commercial permit holders in southeast Alaska will have a better chance of fishing in the coming seasons. That's after the Alaska Board of Fisheries approved a change in management regulations that was proposed by the state. It allows for a smaller, conservative commercial fishery when crab stocks aren't enough to open the typical competitive fishery. KFSK's Olivia Rose reports from Petersburg.
Red king crab is a low-volume, high-value fishery. The crabs can bring in over $100 each, but commercial openings have been few and far between, just one in over a decade. Andy Kiddem's crabs out of Petersburg. He and a number of fellow commercial crabbers testified to the Alaska Board of Fisheries at their meeting in Ketchikan in January.
Had we fished that 117,000 pounds in 2024, it would have been worth over $2 million to the state of Alaska's fishermen. The economic trickle-down to our processors and coastal communities would have doubled that. So let's move this arbitrary threshold. Simple enough. Change the regulation, harvest the surplus, king crab when available.
That quote-unquote arbitrary threshold refers to a regional 200,000-pound minimum that was set decades ago when the crab were less valuable and the industry only made money on higher volumes. There needs to be that much crab in order for a competitive commercial fishery to happen. But the state's Red King crab stock estimates for the region have repeatedly fallen short of that minimum threshold. And without a commercial opening, crabs that could have been caught stay in the water and out of commercial pots. That's partly why, for years, permit holders and the department have been trying to form a new way to harvest the resource.
Fishermen, processors, and EDF&G developed this proposal to allow a controlled crab fishery, which will keep the harvest at the prescribed level. It will give fishermen an opportunity to go to work, give local processors an opportunity to keep their workers employed. Everyone wins, and that's why Proposal 243 has widespread industry support.
The proposal, which was submitted by Alaska's Department of Fish and Game, garnered unanimous support from the Board of Fish. Member Curtis Chamberlain of Anchorage commended the department and said he was moved by the innovation of fishermen when facing a marginalized resource.
I found a lot of that discussion, quite frankly, inspiring, because if there's one thing we're finding is a lot of these markets are becoming marginalized and we have to find ways to operate within this new dynamic. And the Red King crab fishery has, and the fishermen have shown, if nothing, adaptable.
The proposal's approval means that when Red King crab estimates fall short of 200,000 pounds, a smaller, conservative commercial fishery can open for a given season. In that scenario, a so-called individual catch limit, or ICL, gets assigned to permit holders based on how much crab can be fished. Department officials say it's a management tool, and there's still a chance the fishery closes before a permit holder has taken their full ICL. They also say this biologically-based harvest strategy doesn't give the fishermen a guaranteed or set amount of Red King crab harvest every year. Adam Messmer is the State Department's lead shellfish biologist for the region.
Looking back over the history, if this was implemented, it would have opened the fishery, I believe, twice in the last 20 years. It's not going to make it a free-for-all. This isn't going to be something that happens every single year. It would add a very minute amount of opportunity.
But even so, a number of commercial fishermen who testified said it's a step in the right direction. The board's approval of the proposal followed their unanimous rejection of a different Red King crab proposal from a Juneau-based group. That proposal aimed to eliminate commercial fishing for Red King crab in the Juneau area, where the state estimates that a quarter of the region's Red King crab reside. Instead, the proposal asked that the personal use fishery have 100% of the harvest. Board member Tom Carpenter of Cordova asked Messmer how removing that area's portion of the region's crab from the 200,000-pound minimum would impact the commercial fishery.
If this were to pass, will you be able to execute the Red King crab fishery at all in the future on the commercial side of things?
The way the regulations are now with the thresholds, no, member Carpenter.
The total allocation the Juneau proposal asked for raised red flags for board members. Member Chamberlain said it went too far.
If the Alaska fishery was a body, this proposal would be cutting off the right arm to support the left. I think the long-term implications and damage to the overall body of the Alaska fishery cannot justify benefiting the personal use, as much as I love Alaskans to have crab meat in their freezer or in their pots. I can't go that far.
The Board of Fish unanimously opposed the idea, and the Juneau Group's proposal failed. Southeast commercial Red King crab season, if it opens, typically happens in November. The last time it opened in 2017, fishermen caught about 120,000 pounds, worth around $1.3 million at the docks. Reporting from Petersburg, I'm Olivia Rose.
Statewide support of the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Satellite Technical Services, providing satellite communication solutions for commercial fishermen across the state of Alaska. Information and dealers can be found at satellitewest.com or by calling 206-321-6896.
A collaboration between a Washington State nonprofit organization and a Northwest Arctic Health Association distributed thousands of pounds of salmon in Kotzebue last month. KOTZ's Desiree Hagen reports.
On a cold afternoon, a line of cars and snow machines idle in front of Manilik Health Center. Kotzebue residents wait to receive 5-pound bags of salmon. It's sockeye salmon, cut and vacuum sealed into individual portions.
Employees hand out the bags to eager residents one at a time, while others unload and open 30-pound boxes of fish. The salmon is from SeaShare, a Washington State nonprofit.
The kind of the gist of it is to receive high-protein, high-quality, nutritious seafood to distribute to community members within our region.
Levi Gilbert works at Manelik's Special Projects Program. His department, along with Manelik's Diabetes Program, coordinated with SeaShare to distribute the fish. Gilbert says in total, over 7,000 pounds of salmon were handed out in Kotzebue. He says his department worked with Manelik's Elder Services and Hunters Program to distribute salmon to the community's elders beforehand.
So ensuring that those populations are receiving fish and likely going to be hand-delivered to their households.
Gilbert says Manelik Association has done similar fish giveaways in the past, but this was the first time working with SeaShare. According to its website, SeaShare began as a way to distribute bycatch, which are fish unintentionally caught while targeting other species. A representative from SeaShare said in an email that the fish was purchased from an unnamed Alaska seafood company. To date, the organization says it has distributed over 200,000 pounds of fish to over a dozen mostly rural Alaskan communities. Its goal is to address food security and supply chain issues to provide better access to Alaska seafood. Josh Fillable is a coordinator for Manelik's diabetes program. He says that the fish comes at a critical time, following a dismal salmon season.
A lot of people are used to eating salmon, but people weren't able to catch that much. People have said how excited they are to get this.
Last year, Kotzebue Sound's commercial salmon fishery experienced a dramatic crash, with one of the worst returns on record. Fillable says Manelik is working with SeaShare to coordinate additional seafood distributions in the region's outlying villages. In Kotzebue, I'm Desiree Hagan.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund. In recognition of the fishing industry, which provides more than 50,000 Alaskan jobs from a renewable source.
Stop this!
Thank you. You are listening to 830 AM KSTP in Sandpoint, Alaska.
Ripoff! $8 KSDP Radio, 8:30 a.m., Sandpoint, Alaska, 88.1 FM on translator K201DA, King Cove, Alaska.